Welcome to The Created Life. Each week, The Created Life podcast offers insightful, inspiring interviews with entrepreneurs, creatives, and people just like you about being empowered, living with vitality, and creating positive change in the world through creative action. The Created Life covers a wide range of topics relating to personal growth, adventure, inspiration, business, social impact, fitness, and health. My name is Damian Taggart. I'm a serial social impact entrepreneur, and I'll be your host on this journey. Thanks for joining me for this episode of The Created Life. Welcome back to The Created Life. Today marks the 10th episode of the show since I launched it 12 weeks ago. The show took an unplanned hiatus last week because I needed to work through some personal issues I was having. I found myself in a place of resistance to a few things in my life, so I took a day or two to do a solo backpacking trip into the Oregon Mountains near Las Cruces. The Oregons are an amazing mountain range that I really want to get back to. I had never been there. I'd only seen them from the highway as I was driving to Texas or something in the past. The Oregons are kind of like a mini Teton range or something like that. They're these dramatic, really pointy, rocky desert peaks with very few established trails. I did one of the few established trails that exists in the range. I summited the Oregon Needle, which is the highest point in the range, which was quite a nice adventure to do on my own. It was really good for me to clear my head and kind of become more grounded. And what I realized that was going on in my life is that I had kind of some resistance to some things in my life that I didn't control, things that had to do with other people's reaction to me or to things that I did. And I was reminded of a phrase that I actually don't remember who said it, but the phrase is, "What you resist persists." It sounds kind of like a Tony Robbins type of thing. And I was realizing that, yeah, what I needed to do was to kind of submit to the reality that I was in. And that was a journey that I just had to go through. So if you find yourself resisting things in your life that are in the way, that's something to think about. Maybe there's a way for you to accept. This is a lesson that I've learned countless times, and it makes me realize that it's really not about learning a lesson and absorbing information and then you ascend to the next level, spiritually or mentally. It's really about becoming a practitioner of these lessons. So it's like learning the same lesson over and over is really just means you're practicing that way of life, that way of seeing. So anyway, it was good for me to get out into the wild. Some other things that are going on for me that are kind of new is that I'm taking a break from social media, which is something that I've often kind of laughed at, actually, to be honest. When people take break from social media, I in the past sort of thought, had a bit of a judgmental attitude, like, that indicates a sort of personal failing, that you're out of balance with your social media use, and thinking that there was a way to be completely in control of that in the same way. And I think that that's true to some degree, but here I am needing a break. And what I realized is that I needed to go inward a little bit and to practice being quiet, practice not exercising my voice quite as much. And that also led, me to taking a break from the podcast last week, which was also good, And so I'm sort of dwelling on this idea of doing less, saying less, and allowing there to be more space for me to simply exist and simply be open to the things that I encounter and discover. But in terms of building value, one of the things that I come back to in a lot of different areas of life, whether it's my physical practice or spiritual practices or business practices. I've found that commitment is one of the strongest and most important aspects to success in any area of life. So two things. One is that today's episode, I speak with a person who is extremely committed to a practice. And along with this idea of commitment, you know, I wanted to get back to this podcast, even though I'm kind of feeling personally in a place of wanting to be in some ways more withdrawn and more quiet. I know from personal experience that it's doing something consistently over time that builds value. And that's true in podcasting as it is in really any other area. So on today's episode of The Created Life, I interview a thoughtful and extremely focused individual from Norway, Ulrich Fossum. Ulrich is a hand balancer, and we'll get into what that means. He is also a personal trainer and a coach. I discovered Ulrich through his Instagram feed. Ulrich's humor, storytelling, and total commitment and focus drew me in, and I've gotten a lot out of following him. I hope you enjoy our conversation today. And if you do enjoy The Created Life, please support the show by sharing this episode and telling your friends about it, or tagging Wildest in your story and letting us know what you think about today's episode. Thank you so much for listening. Cool. Yes, I'm here with Ulrich Fossum, who is a hand balancer from Norway. I came across Ulrich on Instagram and started following his posts, and really just, I was attracted to your kind of like storytelling and the way that you used the medium of Instagram to kind of share what you were passionate about and what, you know, just kind of showing your work as a hand balancer. And I think it's an interesting thing that it seems to become more and more popular. Like, people are trying to push their bodies in new ways. I appreciate the opportunity to talk with you and to kind of learn more about you and what you're up to.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, definitely. So you just got back from being on kind of a tour in the US.
Yeah.
And where did you go?
This was the first workshop tour that I've been doing. It was me and my friend Tom Merrick. We both are teaching hand balance and bodyweight training. So we went to DC, then New York, Denver, San Diego, and Los Angeles, and did a total of, I think it was 5 workshops over a 3 weeks period of time.
Cool. And how'd it go?
It was so much fun.
Yeah, great. Yeah,
awesome. That's it was cool. Much better than expected.
That's great. So what? How big were your workshops? Like, how many people showed up?
It was usually between 20 and 30 people.
Cool.
Per weekend. And then we had some small workshops in between with the advanced and midweek workshops as well, with fewer people. So we had like a roof on about 25 people, and sometimes more showed up. So it was went better than expected. And people seemed very happy as well. So that was a very good experience.
Awesome. So for people who don't know what hand balancing is, can you explain it? Like, because maybe people just think, oh, so it's a guy who stands on his hands. Like, what is that? You know, how do you explain it to people?
Yeah. It's very hard to explain to people. It's what happens all the times when I'm at parties and stuff, and I tell people that I do handstands, and they'd be like, oh, can you walk on your hands as well? And I'm like, no, that's not it. Hand balance is kind of the art on how to move on your hands in different shapes and positions and kind of make it a thing. I think you have to see it before you will understand how much work goes into it. Because different shapes are... you need a visual on it. So Google hand balance and you will see what it's about.
Totally. And I'll add some links to your Instagram and places people can look at your work too, so they have a better sense of what you're doing. So cool. How did you get started in this on this path?
The first time I saw a person do a one-arm handstand, it was online. It was a guy called Yuval Ilom, also called Yuval on Hands on Instagram. I saw he had a very good physique and he did a one-arm handstand, and I couldn't believe what I was seeing because I'd never seen that before in real life or on Instagram. At that time, I was kind of searching for a thing that I wanted to become good at. I was then into marathon and fitness, but I wasn't very pleased with any of them. I felt like it wasn't long term, because with fitness you go on a diet and you train hard and then you look good for 2 weeks, get a few pictures, and then that's it. And for marathons, you run your ass off for 6 months and then you do a marathon and you have an end time and your body is destroyed afterwards, and then that's it. So I wanted something to build on for a long time that will kind of that I can continuously become good at for many, many years. It was sustainable. So I was so happy when I found a picture of Yuval, because he had a good physique, which I was very attracted to at that time since I was young, and he did the one-arm handstand. So then that's when I kind of discovered that it was possible.
So how long ago was this? How many years have you been practicing?
This is about 6.5 years ago now.
Cool.
When I was like 20, 21 years old when I first started. And then I started just to play around on my own, just knowing that it was possible. I started to mess with it. And then I understood that I need some information. So then I did this search online. There was less information out there than there is now. So I found the IDO portal, GMB, and tried to kind of figure out what it was about, because then all I knew was like dips and bench press. So there was lot to learn, because it's technical. So these things isn't obvious.
Totally. So, you know, you mentioned like IDO portal. What do you think about IDO portal?
I think that he reaches a lot of people with a lot of good stuff. So I give him a lot of credit for reaching out to many people with good things, and he's very popular. So people has to be happy with what he provides.
Mm-hmm.
But I don't like his style of teaching, or I think he creates a cult around him, mm-hmm. where he's the master sensei, and if you ask questions, you get blocked from his groups and you're not to see his workshops and anything like that. So I don't like that part of it, but I like that he reaches a lot of people with good information.
That's cool. Yeah. So who are you, who are you most inspired by right now? Or like, who do you look up to, I guess?
I look up to Mikael Kristiansen, which cool. Has been my coach and teacher for the first 3 or 4 years of my kind of little journey in hand balance. He's the only circus-schooled professional hand balancer in Norway.
Oh, cool. And so did you work directly with him, or like did you do coaching with him?
Yeah, I met him through a friend we have in common when I was just figuring this stuff out. I could barely hold a handstand, and then I trained with him. So he's the first person I saw the one-arm handstand in real life, and I was so amazed. And then we trained together because we had this friend in common, and I asked more and more about handstand, and he showed me stuff. He told me a lot of stuff, and then I begged him to coach me. Back then, he didn't do coaching, so I was kind of his first student. So I worked with him whenever he was in Oslo, because he's a performers, we was touring around, and we did online training as well. So cool. He kind of showed me everything about the circus world that I didn't know anything about.
Oh, nice. That's cool. And you're appearing, you have an appearance coming up on Norway's Got Talent. Is that right? Did you say that?
Yeah. Yes. I think it's time for me to kind of, I've been training so much in a gym and not getting out there except on social media. Mm-hmm. But now I feel confident enough that I have something to show for more people as well.
So kind of so, turning it into performance.
Yeah. I'm not schooled in circus arts, so I don't really know how to perform. So I think this is kind of an easier way to get into that world. a little bit without like going the full school and going full service.
Mm-hmm.
If that makes sense.
Totally. Yeah. And that's one of the interesting things about your story, I think, is that you, other than, you know, you've had a couple of teachers, but most of this came out of just like you're mostly self-taught. You did it on your own, right? You've just been...
I think the base knowledge of what I know comes from Mikael. He's been coaching me and teaching me all the principles and a lot of thoughts about it. Later on, when I get better understanding of what's going on, I'm able to kind of think a little bit myself as well, and also find different sources online and add them to my kind of understanding of this whole thing, because it's super complex.
Right. So so you're coaching people. People can take coaching from you online, and they can also go see your workshops. But you're also doing like physical training or personal training with other people.
Yeah.
And so
I've been a PT for over 5 years now, a personal trainer, both for in the start it was most like common people who need to just get in shape. But now there's about 50-50 of hand balanced people and normal people.
Cool. And is that your goal, to like shift it to where you're doing hand balancing 100% of the time, or do you like doing both?
I like doing both, but I want to do more and more hand balance relevant things.
Cool.
I'm very routine person, so I like my little bubble where I do the same thing every day and I eat the same thing every day, and then I do my training so I can focus on that. But so the workshop thing was a big change in my kind of life. I didn't expect to like it because I like my habits so well.
Mm-hmm.
But I did it and I really loved it.
Cool.
So now I'm kind of, I'm not really sure what I'm going to do for the next years. Maybe more of that, and maybe I go full in and quit personal training. I'm not sure right now.
Cool. Mm. So what have you learned as a hand balancer? What has it taught you?
It has taught me a lot about patience and consistency. That it takes so incredibly a lot of time and commitment, and there's so many mind games that your body is playing when you're trying to learn so advanced skills. One day you can feel great and be the champion and do everything well. The next day, everything's just horrible. So it messes with your head. And that's kind of what I like with it. It's so complex. So it's much more challenging. At least I think it's more challenging than just build a physique or gaining like the regular strength.
Totally. Yeah, that's really interesting. I think I saw a post from you at one point where you talked about balance being something that you create and it's not like something that you find. Was that you that posted that? Do you want to talk about that concept a little bit?
Yeah. In the beginning, for most people, they have some visual understanding or thoughts about what handstand is. They see pictures of people who have practiced handstands for a long time, but they only see the picture of the handstand. They don't see the process of getting the handstand. So most people think that training for handstands is just kicking up and kicking up and kicking up until they one day don't fall. But that's not the case. That's when people are kind of looking for something that doesn't exist. So kicking up is not the first step of learning handstands. First step of learning handstand is getting comfortable in a straight position facing the wall. And then distance yourself further from the wall when you get a better understanding of how it is to be upside down. So that's when the creating balance comes in, while just kicking up and hope for finding some magical spot that you won't fall down from is looking for balance, but you can't look or find something that's not there yet.
Right. So can you tell me a little bit about your training? Like, how much do you train? Do you train every day?
Yeah.
And how many hours do you put in?
I usually train between 3 and 4 hours every day.
Wow.
And every every now and then now, it's maybe every fifth day, I don't do handstand. I have rest day from handstand, but then I work on something else, usually flexibility work or some additional other work. But 4 days on for 3 or 4 hours, yeah.
Cool. And so with your training, so you're doing handstands every day, but you're also doing like resistance training, and do you do other things, like, or is it all just handstands? Like,
Handstands is number one for me. Everything else is a substitute that might help me with handstands or mm-hmm. doesn't hurt my handstands. So I do a little bit of weightlifting, hypertrophy, like chins, dips, stuff like that, to maintain some muscle mass, and maybe it might help my handstands. But I keep it low in focus, so I maybe do that 3 or 4 hours per week.
Okay.
That's very little compared to what I do with handstands.
And what about cardio? Do you do any like cardiovascular stuff?
No.
No. Okay. And then you do a lot of flexibility work though, like with splits and can you talk about that a little bit?
Yeah. When I started, my split was this. And since it's audio, I'm using my index and my long finger because it was so incredibly horrible. I didn't have any flexibility whatsoever. So I've been having the need to catch up on flexibility work because hand balance is a thing you need to be really flexible to perform. Because the more advanced you get, the more you need flexibility, because flexibility makes you more efficient in your moves. So when you are more flexible, you need less strength. That's kind of the relationship between strength and flexibility in hand balance. And when you are working on the harder moves, you need to make the move as efficient as possible, or it will be so heavy that it's not possible to hold it. So when you're, for example, working a flag, that's when you have your entire body on one side, sideways. You will need a lot of flexibility, or it'll be so hard that you will collapse. That's why I do so much flexibility, because I started with no flexibility at all, and I need to create everything. It was very important to me to improve there.
Can people start becoming more flexible at any point in their life? Can you be too old to start that process, or what do you think about that?
I think you can always improve from where you are, unless right. you have fulfilled your potential, your genetic potential. So with age, I think it gets harder, but then again, do you want it? You can usually find a way to work towards it.
Cool. Right on. And so in terms of I want to talk a little bit about your use of social media and just kind of like your self-promotion. What do you think about, like, how's your experience been as an Instagrammer so far?
I really like it, and that's why it works. I'm very little business conscious when I'm on Instagram. For me, Instagram is fun, and it's a way that I can express myself and get ideas and thoughts out of my head and down, and hopefully somebody sees some value in it at times. Sometimes it's just bullshit coming from my head that needs to get out. And that's fine. I try not to take it so seriously. I don't have a target of reaching people in a way that creates money for me. That's mm-hmm. never been my intention. And that won't be my intention in the future as well, because I think that takes away the kind of the core value of what it is supposed to be for me, which is fun.
That's cool.
And the good thing is that I think that works positively on people, so that will attract business as well without consciously thinking about it.
Right, totally. So you're not doing any like sponsored posts and things like that, or are you?
I'm having a sponsor relationship with some guys called Ardor. They are two Irish brothers who create a brand with movement. They're super kind guys. They don't have any demands for me, and they give me good quality clothes that I actually use every day, just because I like the clothes.
Cool.
I don't think it contradicts my values. So right. they don't say like, yeah, now we need to post something about that. No, I post when I feel like it's worth it. If I get a cool t-shirt that I think especially good, I will tell that to people.
Cool. Yeah, that's great. I think that's awesome. You know, it's funny. One of the reasons why I thought to reach out to you for an interview is because I was looking at one of your stories at one point, and I have two sons, two little boys, and they were looking over my shoulder, like looking at my phone. And it was the post that you did where you were like, let me tell you a story about Bob. And it was like talking about this guy, Bob, who lives in, you know, he lives in a place where it's always dark, always cold, you know? And it's like, for some reason, my kids just thought that was hilarious. And they just like, they wanted to see that again. And so it was funny because it stuck with me. But I think that's one of the things that seems cool about the work you're doing is like, you know, it's very focused on this physical practice, but you actually do end up telling kind of interesting stories, and you're bringing up interesting points that are not just, it's like not just about, you know, physical training. And I think that makes it more interesting. And I was, so yeah, can you talk about that process a little bit? Cause you are kind of doing something that's like a little bit more creative, I feel, than a lot of people in the fitness world.
Yeah. I get easily bored. So I need to, I think it's fun to kind of just try to make it fun as well. If I get some ideas that I think it's funny, I'm trying to get it out there somehow. And when teaching handstands, there are so many boring people trying way too hard to seem academic about it. Well, it's almost just bullshit, or not bullshit, but it doesn't need to be so boring. So I'm trying to simplify it to reach out to people in a way that they get kind of entertained, but there's also a point with it, so I hopefully get some learning from it as well. That's totally. When I kind of made Bob, because I've been seeing so many people doing the same mistakes, and then I just to over-dramatize it, I made this character, and because I have that character, I can kind of make him a bit stupid about it. And that seemed to work out. So I've been stuck with Bob.
Nice. So what are some things that you would say, you know, have you ever injured yourself like significantly when in your training?
I wouldn't say significantly, because I have almost always been able to keep on training. But when you're taking something, some sport or whatever, and to a certain point, and you're doing it so extremely much, there will be injuries, either because you do a stupid mistakes, or you just overwork yourself. Handbalancing takes a lot on your joints, especially wrists and shoulders, so there are really high chances of getting some sort of injury by the years. So my most recent injury was tendonitis in my right thumb, because of overwork basically. So what I did then was taking it a bit easy. It didn't work, so I talked to a physician who told me that it's only pain, it's not dangerous, but you need to take it a bit more easy for until it gets better. So I did, and it got better. So usually stuff works out unless you I have learned to not freak out too much when I'm feeling something is wrong, but try instead to keep rationalizing. It's common, it goes away usually, and that's the way it is.
Got it. Cool. And do you have specific advice for people to how to avoid injury, or how do you know if you're overtraining, or like anything that you've learned along the way about that?
Yeah, it's very difficult to give some general advice, because people are responding or feeling so differently when stuff is too much or isn't too much. We have the people with like really high tolerance for pain. They can work their ass off, and then they don't feel any pain until they can't use their shoulder or something. And then they have the completely other side, people who can't force one set over the comfort level and won't ever get gains because they're not able to push themselves. So it's learning where in that scale you are. And then if you know that you are the type of person who tend to work yourself too hard, then you need also to relax more. and take it seriously.
Cool. And in terms of like diet and nutrition, what kind of diet do you have?
I'm very easy there because I don't have a really, I'm not very into food. I'm not a foodie. Mm-hmm. So for me, it's very easy to eat the same thing every day. And I know that that fits what my body needs that day. So I can calculate almost what I eat every day and I'm fine with that. So, but advice for other people, I would say to create good routines. Mm-hmm. Eat at certain times per day, eat the same amount of meals per day. Depending on goals, if you want to go increase your weight or go down, you need to be on a caloric surplus or deficit. Mm-hmm. That kind of, yeah.
Mm-hmm. Do you tend towards like a high protein diet or in terms of your like macronutrients, are you like, is it more protein or more fat or like, what are you optimizing for?
I think if you're over 1.8 grams protein per kilo body weight, then you have enough protein in your diet.
Cool.
So that's what I'm at.
Got it.
And then you can basically choose between if you want a high fat or low fat diet, as long as the protein stays high and you're getting enough fibers, enough fruits and vegetables. Yeah.
Cool. Right on. So let me see. You had a post, I think at one point about the concept of like body positivity and talking about, is that post still online? I was trying to find it today.
It's still online.
Yeah. So
I did not throw it away.
So that concept is like, so just to tell our listeners what I'm talking about, basically the discussion was about, was it fat positive or what was the phrase that you used or what was the term?
I think what was fat acceptance.
Fat acceptance, right. And so, yeah, can we talk about that idea a little bit and like a little bit of the ideas in that post? Cool.
Okay. Yeah. My thoughts about that topic is that today it's an increasing problem that with extreme overweight. That is a health problem. It's very relevant for our society to kind of address it and try to work against it. On the other scale, we have a large, it's not that easy because there are people who are overweight and they have feelings, they are human, they have emotions. So when we talk about a general concept for a huge amount of people, some of them will take it personally. Mm-hmm. So when I talk about the problem about overweight, people who are overweight, they found it stigmatizing. There is a thing that I adjust as fat acceptance where a lot of really obese people are trying to create a kind of I am proud of my body, I'm healthy, I'm beautiful, and getting that information really spread out. And I think that can be counterproductive. Yes, it's good to feel good about yourself, but if you are extremely obese, it's not that simple. You actually have a health problem if you feel like it or you don't feel like it.
Totally.
And I think it's important to address that and to kind of promote health. That was my point with the topic.
Yeah, I think, you know, it's interesting. I thought it was cool that you posted about that because it is something that could be, you know, it could piss people off or it could be.
It did.
You know, it could definitely rattle some people. But I think to me, it's like separating the idea of you know, what's healthy and what is good for you as an organism, as a biological creature, from the idea of feeling bad and feeling ashamed. Yeah. It's like feeling ashamed. You don't want to make people feel bad, but you do want to be real about, like, this isn't good for your heart to have to like pump blood to all of these like areas and stuff. And so I think that's a good point to make, that it's like, you know, I think people would benefit from being able to separate those two things and be like, yeah, there's health and then there's feeling good as a person, as a human being or whatever. And they're
I think
not,
it's really important to kind of, to address exactly that there's two different things. It doesn't mean that you're a horrible human being if you have some work to do to make your health better. I don't judge people who are overweight at all. I look them in the eye, I shake them in the hand, I hug them just like everybody else. And I don't have any thoughts that they're bad people or weak or anything like that. But I do think that they have a health issue to address and work on. Yeah. And if they're in the denial of that, that's where the problem occurs. If they are in denial of their health is being bad, and they're also influencing other people in that direction, then I think it's dangerous.
Totally. I see it in a similar way that I see other things, like if I'm addicted to alcohol or something like that, you know, and if I deny that I have a problem, then, you know, it perpetuates the problem. But if I, it's one thing, it's like, so you could choose to continue to have a less healthy lifestyle, and that's fine. You can make that choice. But it's, I think it's important to be self-aware, to have a consciousness about those things. And to, so if you're making a choice to overeat or to, you know, drink too much or whatever, it's good to know that you're doing it. It's good to be in denial about it. Yeah. So that's cool. You know, I appreciate you. I appreciate you for saying those things and having that conversation, because I think it is an unpopular.
Absolutely.
Yeah.
But the problem isn't that people are big and they take pictures of themselves and stuff like that. People are people. I understand that. But the problem is when really big people get almost undressed, which isn't cool, regardless of what size you are, if it's like in a not natural context, and then they also take a picture of eating something that's really unhealthy, like six pack of donuts or whatever, that's when the bad kind of influence gets out there. That's what I'm criticizing.
Right, it's like somebody with lung cancer smoking cigarettes or something like that, right?
Yeah, exactly. Or somebody with alcohol problems, like have a whiskey in their hand or something. It's not cool.
Right. So tell me a little about yourself. Like, what were some challenges you had to overcome, like growing up? Were there any challenges you had to overcome?
Yeah, I was overweight when I was a kid. I was overweight until I was 17. Then I was lazy. I am very introverted, and I have a family that's extroverted. So that was kind of challenging. And I have a mom who had a few rounds of cancer, and I have a big brother who has a very strong epilepsy.
Wow.
So the total of that, like everything, was difficult for me when I was growing up. I would say that it's been kind of a rough way to start everything. So I'm very glad that I have kind of this baggage that follows me and shapes the way that I am.
Right. So it seems like you've created a life that has a lot of ritual, a lot of like predictability to it. You know, you have your daily 3 or 4 hours of training, you have your work that you've thrown yourself into, you have your Instagram audience. And so it seems like you found a lot of, a lot of value for you in following like a discipline, a practice, right?
Yeah. I think I needed a focus, both for myself to feel like I master something, and something to kind of keep me occupied with something that gives me some sort of value, some positive value. And I think my head is pretty strong. I must admit that. And I think I have the kind of capacity to become good at something or whatever. So I'm very glad that I found Hand Balance and made it my thing.
Totally.
I just wish that I found it earlier.
Yeah, right. And you talked to, or you've said some things about bringing handstands to the, or hand balancing to the people. And how do you see that? Like, do you see hand balancing becoming more of a popular thing in the future? Or what do you think about that?
I think so. I think that social media made it more available to people. Because I saw it before it was, before Instagram was big. So I only saw it on YouTube and stuff like that. But now it's so much easier to see what's out there in the world. And in Norway, hand balance isn't a thing yet. We have one professional hand balancer. That's Mikael, the guy I talked about. And that's it. And rest of people think that handstand is a little part of yoga, a little part of gymnastics, or even CrossFit. But I would really like to show people that hand balance is a discipline in itself, and it can be so much, and it can be so much more than just getting to the gym and do your repetitions because a PT or a doctor told you to. It's meant so much for my personal life. And I think there are other people who could have benefited in going that way themselves if they, yeah.
Can you expand on that? Like, how has it been impactful on your personal life? Like, how do you see that? The benefits?
Since it's so challenging, it's more than, it gives some kind of mental work. It's very hard to explain. Since it's so complex, you need to be aware in your head and in your body, both in the same time. It needs to work together. So you kind of learn focus, patience, and a lot of good qualities. That I don't know if I would have had them if I didn't do hand balance or if it's the other way around.
But, right. So you want to see
than
some
just
of the
do a party trick. It's much more.
Yeah, got it. It's not just a party trick. And so you want to see, you think other people could benefit in the same way. And that's kind of what you mean when you say bringing hand balancing to the people. Cool. I love that. Right on. And when you think about your trajectory, do you want to become a professional hand balancer? Is that that's really what you're on track to become, right?
I don't know what that statement means. Like, I view professional hand balancer that's when you perform and live off the performance and that's it.
Okay.
I honestly think that I don't have the potential to do that. I started when I was too old, I'm a bit too tall, and I have an operated hip. So I think that that's not my goal, to be able to live off performance.
Got it.
I want to be as good as I can be, and I'm happy with that. And I want to be as good as coach as I can be and teach other people.
Cool.
And not necessarily the circus people, but the normal people like you and me.
Right. Got it. That's cool. And what are you most proud of so far in your path as a hand balancer, or in your life actually in general?
In my life, possibly be able to stand on my own feet and kind of do my own thing and stick to it. It's easy to get not easy, but to get another education and do the 9-to-5, get a steady income and be safe. but I am proud of not doing that. I'm proud of doing my own thing, going all the way and be able to make a very comfortable living by working 3 to 4 hours a day.
Yeah, that's awesome. What words of advice would you have for somebody else who's maybe still, maybe they're doing the 9-to-5 thing and they have a dream that they haven't committed themselves to? What would you say to that person?
That's very hard because it depends on that person's family situation, how talented they are at the dream. Mm-hmm. Let's be honest, you have to have some sort of understanding of that thing you want to become good at, and you need a realistic expectation of what you can achieve in that thing. If you happen to don't have a good understanding of that, it's more likely that you won't get that far into it. Not to be a dream killer or anything, but I like being good. So if you think you're good, if you think you have the potential to grow, then you can maybe pursue it.
Cool. Right on. So I've been asking everybody that I've been interviewing this question of if they could just virally implant like one idea or one practice to all people, and everybody on earth all of a sudden would start doing this same thing or have this new idea, what would that be? Like, what would you want to spread to all people?
That's a tough one. Possibly not settle.
Don't settle.
Don't settle for the safe thing if you think you can be more happy while taking a risk. Personally, I like to take risks, and it's usually worth it.
Yeah, that's great.
So, if you, yeah.
That's awesome. And one final question for you. What keeps you motivated right now?
Right now, since I just went to USA and did workshop tour and it went better than I expected and I really liked it, right now it's to discover that more and see how my world can change, because for 5 or 6 years I've been living in Oslo as a PT and having like my normal everyday life, and it's been okay. But right now I've seen kind of a bit of what the world has to offer, and I really liked it. So it keeps me motivated to see that there's a more to it than what I've been seeing this far.
Cool. That's awesome. Well, and where can people learn more about your work, and you want to tell people just like where to find you online and stuff?
Ulrik on Hands on Instagram. I'm very, very active on Instagram. So that's where people can reach me for anything. And PM me there if there's something I can help them with.
Awesome. Well, it's been really great talking to you, and I look forward to continuing to see what you come up with on Instagram. And hopefully we can connect again, maybe next time you're in the States or if I'm traveling in Europe or something like that.
Awesome. And thank you so much for having me.
Yeah, great.
It's an honor.
Cool.
That's it for this week's episode of The Created Life. Thanks again for tuning in, and be sure to tune in again next week for another great interview that I haven't selected who will be featured next week. But until next time, I hope that you find the commitment and focus you need for your current vision for yourself. And I also hope that you give yourself the space to go inward and to be silent and to do less if that's where you're at. Until next time, this is Damian Taggart signing off.